And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks, presented by the Ford F-Series. DJ Bucky here with you. We got our man Sully back in town. Nice to have Sully back. We're going to get Sully to jump in here in a little bit, and I believe you're going to want to stick around for this. It's going to be a spirited discussion on his Tennessee Volunteers and what went right, what went wrong. Sully,
save it.
I want you to save all of your energy until we get to that discussion. Buck, what are we getting to today on the show? What we got?
Oh, we got so much to get into. We're going to do with O-line of the week. We're going to talk to our man, Coach Lilly, to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles and what they bring to the table. We also will discuss Eli Manning going to the bench. What in the world is going on?
Yeah, we've got we'll have some fun there on the coaching carousel, the college stuff, as well as some of the big college football games. So a lot to get to. I think, though, we need to start right at the very beginning on this Eli Manning news that has just come down, Buck. And man, this is kind of out of left field. I mean, the Giants have been awful. They have a lot of issues, a lot of injuries. I did not think Eli Manning was problem number one, but his consecutive start streak is coming to a close. 210 straight games. There will not be a 211 because the fighting Geno Smiths will now be taking the field for the G-men. Geno Smith gets the nod over Eli Manning. One word, wow.
I mean, I think it's a wild word, but I think if we really looked at this in context, I think part of being a decision maker is being able to take emotion out of it. And if you take the emotion out of it, you take the nostalgia out of it, and you look at what Eli Manning is, I think it's safe to say that, like, he's a declining player at this point. And in 2018, he probably wasn't going to be a guy that you still wanted to build around. So if you firmly believe that the 2018 class offered a franchise quarterback, why not put those other guys in, see what you have, and not necessarily Geno Smith, but see what you have in Davis Webb, see if he offers anything to lead you to believe that he can be a franchise player, and then still continue to position yourself in a spot where you can get one of the marquee players in the draft.
Yeah, conspiracy theorists, and I guess I throw myself in this mix here. Eli Manning's still good enough to win you a couple games. You're gonna get you a couple ball games out. So the conspiracy theorist in me says, well, Geno Smith might not be good enough for you to win a couple games. And if you are in love with one of these quarterbacks, and we've been talking about them all throughout the year, we'll see who comes out. The Browns are going to be right up there in the draft order. No, they're not going to win many ball games. So you got to fend them off. The 49ers, we'll see if they end up going to Garoppolo. If not, they're going to be right there. So the Giants are sitting there in that top three range. I don't think you want to fall out of that to get your quarterback of the future high in this upcoming draft. And maybe Eli Manning screw around and mess that up for you. So get him out of there. You're not going to be with him next year. So at this point in time, I think there is something to that. Hey, let's try and hold our place there at the top of the draft. I'll be shocked if Coach McAdoo is back next year. That's based on no inside information, just on watching this team and how they're ready to play each and every week, even with the injuries. I'll be shocked if he's there. And we say it all the time, Buck. New coach equals what?
Oh,
new quarterback.
New quarterback. That's the thing that you have to bring in. Like, you have to take this into account. I know we're having a love affair immediately right now with Eli. But I think we said for 2 years that he's a declining player. He's no longer the guy that he was. He won a couple Super Bowls for the Giants, and he should receive all kinds of kudos for that. But if you really look at him, is he a top 15 player at his position right now? No. Is he a top 20 player? Maybe. If you're the New York Giants and you recognize that this team needs to be in full rebuild mode, you do everything that you possibly can do to put yourself in a position to acquire good blue-chip players. This is part of that long-term strategy. Regardless of whether the coach is there, regardless of whether the GM is there, I think this is a full organizational call to get this team back on track.
Bucky, before the season, we both talked about the Giants as a sleeper. Maybe not even a sleeper. A very awake Super Bowl contender.
I said a Super Bowl team.
They are going to finish this season, in all likelihood, with Geno Smith throwing the ball to Roger Lewis and Tavarius King. That's a little different look than what we thought we were going to get from this team earlier in the season.
I mean, it's different. It's different than what I thought when I said print the shirts in the spring after they signed Brandon Marshall. It's not what I anticipated. Here's what would be interesting to see if this plays out. What if for some reason Geno Smith actually plays well enough for this team to win? What if they're in a situation in the fourth quarter where they actually could win the game? Is that something where you then put Davis Webb in the game? Is this something where we're looking to tank? Are we having the new process begin in the Giants with the Giants? Or are they really just trying to get Geno Smith some reps to see exactly what he is and not worry about the wins?
No, it's interesting. It's a very interesting point here. The Giants, I mean, you look, there's a whole host of problems with this ball club. I think one of the things that's kind of needs to be mentioned here is offensive line-wise. I mean, they're not very good. That Super Bowl team, when they had those Super Bowl teams, they were built in the trenches without question. They were, I want to say, they were in top 10 both those years in sacks and in sacks allowed. Right now, they are kind of middle of the pack offensive line. They're giving up 26 sacks. Defensively, they're 26th in the league in sacks. So we could talk about the quarterback position and making a change there. I think for the most part, there are some exceptions when you have Russell Wilson who can run around and cover up what they have up front. For the most part, you show me the good teams, I'll show you who's getting good play in the trenches, offense, defensive line, preferably start with defensive line, then offensive line, then quarterback play. Those are the three ingredients. Sprinkle in the skill players around that. That's all extra. That's fluff. They have got to get things right in the trenches on the offensive line for whoever's playing quarterback for them next year.
Well, absolutely. I just wonder when it comes down to the draft, will we see the prospects that they need match what the needs are? Are there enough offensive linemen at the top of the board to justify
they're going to take a quarterback in one.
Where they're going to pick? So now if you take the quarterback in one, I think we can confidently say that there are going to be enough offensive linemen in that second round range to maybe justify. Maybe they get in the bottom of the first round and get that offensive lineman. But I do believe this is a team that typically doesn't finish in the top five. They have an opportunity to finish in the top five. And if we're so fired up about this quarterback class, you got to take a swing at a quarterback, right? Like, that's kind of what we talk about all the time. Let's see if they can find their quarterback.
All right. Now, I just want to compare a couple different situations here. So you've got some injuries you've had there for the Giants offense, obviously Odell Beckham Jr. being the biggest one. But even with if you look at the Minnesota Vikings to me, what they did in the offseason, they were aggressive. And I think some people, maybe they overpaid with what they did in free agency at the offensive line position. Mm-hmm. But they brought in some new bodies. They addressed it in free agency. They went out and got Elflein in the draft. They kind of shored up their weak spot, that offensive line, in one offseason. And to the point where they were able to withstand injuries to a couple quarterbacks. Case Keenum, their third dude out there, is playing at a very, very high level. So to me, the injuries are not an excuse in the NFL. They reveal your shortcomings. We've seen it with the Cowboys. When Tyron Smith's out, they fall apart. The Eagles, Jason Peters is out, they don't fall apart. They've built in depth their sound from 1 to 53, and I think this Giants team incapable of overcoming some of the injuries that they've had.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was obviously like a sandcastle. It fell apart when the water washed onto the shore. We didn't see this team continue to hold up and do the things that we thought that they could do. So, yes, they need to do a complete overhaul. They need to look at the operation and figure out what players can give them an opportunity to come back quickly. I think we can confidently say their offensive line needs some retooling. They need to find some guys. Ereck Flowers was not the left tackle that they thought that he would be. I've always felt like he was better positioned to be on the right side. They need to add more pieces and then figure out what they want to do at quarterback, because I don't care what you say, it's not a game for old quarterbacks to play and continue to play at a high level. At some point, they need to find their quarterback to go with the rest of the stuff that also need to fix.
I've given you my draft theory here too, which is something I think somebody's going to do it eventually, and we're going to see how it all goes down. Andy Reid was kind of known for doing this when he was with the Eagles back in the day, but 2 of 3, that's my rule, 2 of 3. Two of your first three picks every year should be in the trenches.
Absolutely.
Two of three.
I mean, absolutely.
This is a Giants team that's missed on Ereck Flowers, but that's why you keep going back to
you
that.
Double up. Just keep doubling up. Keep making sure you add big bodies, because you can't go wrong by investing in the trenches on offense and on defense. You can never have enough big bodies that can play in this league.
And to their credit, they have a lot of first and second round players on the offensive line. They've tried this theory. They've gone big on the defensive line as well. Haven't got the right guys. But again, to me, just keep churning.
Just keep rolling. Man, you just got to keep flipping coins. You have to keep trying to see if you can find some guys that can play on that front line. It's been a huge issue. They haven't gotten it right when it comes to drafting and finding the right guys. But I can never fault them for trying to position themselves in a situation where they can get the best players at the top of the board.
All right, time now for the offensive line of the week presented by the Ford F-Series. This is something our good buddy Sean O'Hara does, NFL.com/Ford. You can check out his – I believe he has his top five offensive lines of the week. Our winner this week, Buck, I believe we're thinking Chargers. Is that where we're going here?
Yeah, I think the Chargers. I think the performance that we saw on Thanksgiving Day, the way they shredded the Dallas Cowboys with Phillip Rivers throwing the ball all over the yard. They did it out of spread sets, empty sets. Anybody and everybody who wanted to catch a pass caught a pass, and it's because the pass protection up front was outstanding. L.A. Chargers should get the offensive line of the week.
434 passing yards for Phillip Rivers. How many sacks did they have, Buck? How many sacks?
Zero.
Yeah, that's a donut. Nice job there by the Chargers. Los Angeles Chargers, our Ford offensive line of the week. All right, let's bring in our good buddy here. This is we just recorded this a little bit ago, Buck, and this is, trust me, you guys are going to love this interview. This is Coach John Lilly, who's got some fascinating takes here on the Philadelphia Eagles and why they've been successful. All right, Buck, let's welcome back in our good buddy, Coach John Lilly. And if you've listened to the podcast, you know about Coach and his background. Spent a long time coaching at the collegiate level, spent some time in the NFL as well. And we've kind of contracted him out this year to do some special projects for us. And, Coach, I know something you've been working on for a little while now. I'm excited to get your thoughts on this Philadelphia Eagles team, best record in the NFL. And when you got a chance to really break them down, you came up with three reasons why they're rolling the way they are. Can you share us a little wisdom here? What do you got for us?
Sure, sure. And I'm going to try to go beyond the obvious that the quarterback's playing well and things like that, obviously. But, you know, I'll tell you what they are and then very briefly kind of hit on them to me what stands out. Number one, they run into really favorable looks because of what they do. You know, I think the big thing, you know, the RPO game, the zone read that they mix in there just a little bit. I'm, you know, with college background, I love the RPOs. You know, they're so big there. It's a little bit different in the NFL, but you can do it, and you see people do it successfully. And they're about right now, they're about 11 RPOs per game, but they're averaging about 5.3 yards when they give the ball, you know, on the runs on the RPOs. And so, you know, that's like 0.7 yards higher than their normal running average is. So obviously they're running in some good looks, and then you've got to throw off of it that they've actually hit a couple scores on here recently in the last few weeks. And you say, well, they're averaging, I think it's 5.5 yards when they throw it. And you say, that's not that much, but that might have been a negative run, you know, if you give the ball or if you just blind call a play. So they're running in some really good looks. And then obviously the quarterback's making great decisions on it. They're utilizing the strength of their personnel is the second thing. You know, I mean, I don't know if I was a defensive coordinator in the NFL getting ready to play these guys. If I'm sitting at, you know, Seattle this week and Coach Carroll and those guys there getting ready to play them, who do you say you have to stop? You know, they've had five different guys lead them in rushing in a game. You know, you go to the red zone and you say, hey, we got to stop Zach Ertz because he's going to catch the same route every week for a touchdown almost, you know, it seems. But they do a great job mixing that personnel up, and they've obviously got guys in the right places, you know, like Nelson Aguilar in the slot and kind of not having to be the go-to guy now with all the guys they brought in there. I mean, here's a guy that I don't want to say is, you know, he's kind of reborn his career or whatever because he's just a third-year guy, but he's kind of saved his career or certainly, you know, gotten off on the right foot now. And so they use those guys. They're very balanced. The first two games of the year, they were 85 passes and 41 runs, and now they're averaging 33 passes and 32 runs a game. You can't get more balanced than that, really. And then the last thing is they repeat plays. I mean, they run plays. They're good plays. I think it's a weakness a lot of us have. You know, you give the other team too much credit. Well, that was a good play, so they're going to adjust for that. Well, they keep running them, you know, and then from week to week, they're going to have the same stuff in their system, but they may change personnel a little, change a formation, add a motion, whatever, and you're going to see the same plays show up over and over, so they get good at it. They're good at what they do, and that's the reason. They practice it. They run it in games. They're good at what they do. It may sound oversimplistic, but, I mean, consider this, too, being a little bit silly, but they've been in victory formation 17 times this year. They're pretty darn good at that one. That's what they're going to be good at, you know?
Hey, Coach, I want to cut you off here real quick. Their run game, when I've watched them, man, I've seen they're incorporating a lot of traps in their run game, which you don't see a ton of anymore. They've seemed like they found a little something there.
Absolutely love it. You know, they've got the old wham play.
Yep.
The tight end comes down on the, you know, they run it really a lot to the three technique, but sometimes into the nose. And they've got that. They run against every front. They hit it every week. You know, people know it's coming, and I think they had a 22-yard run on it the other day, you know, in their last game against Chicago. And you're right. I think it was Dallas. They hit them like four times on the trap, you know, just the classic guard trap. And they've got all those different things. They've got the pin and pulls. Obviously, they got the zone game, the one-back power. But, again, you're going to see them every week, but they're going to look just different enough probably in their presentation to the defense that that it gives people problems, and they're good at what they do. Their offensive line coach, a guy named Jeff Stoutland, has been outstanding.
Old Alabama coach.
Exactly. Bad memories there.
What was your so, coach? I've got the RPO zone read stuff down. I've got the ability to use a lot of different weapons, so you kind of struggle with who do you try and take away from this ball club. So that was the second. What we got for number three then? Did I miss that one?
The third one was that they repeat plays.
They're
good at what they do. And now you'll see them hit a big play and get back over the line and run the same play. You know, and obviously you get used to that in like a 4-minute scenario at the end of a game or something, because people will do that. But, I mean, they'll do it in during the course of the game.
That's almost like that Steve Spurrier premise, because Steve Spurrier was big on repeating plays. He'll run a play, he'll flip the formation and run the same play over and over again.
There is no doubt about it. I mean, you saw him against the Giants, I think, the third game of the year. They missed Ertz in the red zone on what we used to call a little shop route, a short post with a collect route inside, and they missed him, and so they come right back. They motion to the same formation, run it again, and throw it for a touchdown the very next play. I mean, it's really neat what Frank Reich and Coach Peterson, those guys, are doing.
Man, I mean, that's outstanding. I think I have this theory, Coach, when it comes to the Eagles and what they're doing offensively. Doug Peterson was a high school coach, I think 2005 to 2009.
In Louisiana.
Yeah. In Louisiana, maybe Calvary Baptist, yeah, or whatever. And I believe that his experience in high school has certainly helped him with the pro game. When you talk about these RPOs and some of the things that they're doing, can you feel some of that high school influence in terms of their simplicity, even though they're playing at the highest level?
I think there's no doubt about it. And I mean, I've actually been talking to friends and things like that. When I was at Georgia, kind of the 2011 to 13 or 14 range, I mean, they look very similar. I don't want to act like we were doing all the exact same things. We had some different things in the run game, whatever, but it's very similar. A lot of 11 personnel, you know, a little mix of 12 and, you know, formations and the RPOs. I mean, you see it more with, I think, maybe it's with the young quarterbacks, you know, too. It kind of puts them in a comfort zone. But, I mean, they give everybody a chance on the field to be a viable weapon. And there's the old saying, you're playing with 11 when your quarterback can also be a ball carrier, you know, for you. And that's so rare in the National Football League to be able to do that. And you see it every Friday night and every Saturday in high school and college football.
I'll tell you what, Coach, me and Bucky have been sitting here taking notes on everything you're giving us. This is great stuff here. We appreciate the Eagles' knowledge. I want to go get just real quick, get over to the college side here. We've got the conference championship games coming up. Now, I know you've had some time, ACC and SEC championship games, you've been a participant. Is that correct?
That's right, at Florida State and at Georgia.
So give me your best story. If I just got to whittle it down to one, I need your favorite memory, maybe your best conference championship memory. What is it?
Oh, man. Well, the best one probably would be the ACC. It was the first ACC championship game at Florida State. We played Virginia Tech, and it would be the best because we won. We lost the two times that I was at Georgia. But, you know, I think the thing you take away, the atmospheres are so over the top in those games, and I can't imagine what it'll be like this year, where really you start looking down, you know, the SEC, the ACC, I mean, maybe the Big Ten, I mean, where whoever wins is going to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And so I go back to 2012 when I was at Georgia, and we played Alabama. I think we were both 11-1 at the time, and it was one of the best games I had ever been involved in, you know, as far as a coach. And unfortunately, we lost 32-28. Had a big drive at the end of the game that we ended up running out of time inside the five at the end of the game. But just the atmosphere, you know, around it, and the caliber of players, you know, I mean, it was a great battle. And that's the thing, the environment is so different. Even in a national championship game, I was blessed to be in four of those at Florida State. And it's different than that, because you feel like it's more of a corporate setting maybe. I don't know how it is now, but in the national championship games, and I know in those conference championship games, I know the SEC, it gets overblown a little bit, but it is kind of a wild environment. And, you know, inside, outside, just pulling into the stadium, there's a lot of people at the game that don't have tickets. They're just there, you know, and they're outside. And I think to see the caliber of the players and guys that elevate their play, you know, it's just a fun thing to be a part of. You talk about that Eagles staff and Mike Groh, the receivers coach, who I was with the Rams, And like I said, Jeff Stoutland, they were both on that Alabama staff that beat us that year. So,
but you still remain friends. That says a lot about your character.
Somehow we do. I don't know. No doubt.
Hey,
no
Coach,
doubt.
This is absolute money stuff here. We've enjoyed having you on throughout the year. We'll see if we can get you on here one more time. You are a special projects consultant. I think that's the official title that we're giving you. You nailed it today on the Eagles, and I appreciate your insight on the college side as well. I look forward to doing this again real soon.
Sure thing. Love it. Appreciate it, guys.
That was good stuff there, Coach. I mean, look, Coach is dialed in, has been doing his homework. I love it when you get these coaches, Bucky, that are kind of in that sabbatical year. We saw Chip Kelly kind of just spent his year out of football and then got back in. They take on these projects, and we've been fortunate enough to have Coach Lilly just kind of help us out, give us what he's seeing, what he's studying. Fascinating stuff there, especially with the Eagles.
Fascinating stuff. I mean, the way he broke it down, what they're doing with their young quarterback. Talk about the run-pass option, what they're doing with the running game, and how balanced they are. You see all things are clicking with the Eagles' offense. It is one of the reasons why they're one of the tougher teams to beat this season.
Yeah, he mentioned it right at the top, though. It does help when you've got a quarterback playing at a very high level. And I would imagine, unless they're playing in the Super Bowl, which they could well be the way they're rolling right now, Carson Wentz will be in the Pro Bowl. Here's the good news for fans at home. You want to see your favorite player in the Pro Bowl, it's up to you. Get online and vote. NFL.com/Pro Bowl vote. And see your favorite players there. Playing in Orlando this year is where the game's going to be. So NFL.com/Pro Bowl vote. All right, let's jump over to the college side here. And before Sully jumps out of his skin, I do want to promote one of the things we're doing on NFL.com. Each and every week we've been profiling a different player. We've had one of our talented writers go out and really get the full story on some of these top players and fascinating stories. And this week, it's a man from Clemson who's one of the best defensive linemen in the NFL, in the college football, I should say.
Yeah, Christian Wilkins is a dominant player. He's a guy that is a rarity at the position, someone that can play from the 1 to the 9 technique. I mean, he can line up over the center. He can go all the way outside and be a stand-up outside linebacker. You won't see athletic freaks with his kind of talent coming to the league often. That is why there's so many scouts salivating over his potential to be a top pick.
Outstanding player and a good story. So do yourself a favor. Go NFL.com/Christian Wilkins and read that story there. Good stuff on a great player. All right, Sully, we're going to get to the coaching carousel in a second, which is going to get us to a spirited debate here on your Tennessee Volunteers. Before we do that, though, a couple things. Buck, the games last week, the conference championship games, I know it's been a couple days now. Biggest takeaway for you from what we saw last week, couple upsets, number one, number two, they go down.
Yeah, Alabama and Auburn was a big one for me. I think the big thing with Auburn winning was the physicality and toughness of their team on offense and defense. You talked about the running back, Kerryon Johnson, being a stud, and he does. And all the things that you wrote about him being some Le'Veon Bell type-ish playmaker, he certainly showed that. And then when I look at Alabama, the same issues continue to plague them. Their passing game is inconsistent. You see some of the big bodies and the things they're doing. But when they get behind, they just don't have this hurry-up ability to kind of put points on the board in dramatic fashion. I think it ultimately came back to bite him in that game.
Your boy Judy made a big catch, big touchdown catch. I mean, what a stud.
They got young playmakers, but their ability to open it up is kind of limited. I don't think that is what their quarterback does really well. We'll see how it goes as they play it out.
How about Ohio State and Michigan? And Ohio State keeps it rolling. Michigan, man, they have got to find a quarterback. There's too much talent on that football team to be where they are with four losses. I know they had a bunch of guys they lost last year. I think, 20 guys or something they sent to the league in some fashion. Some form or fashion this year, though, still young, talented players, 4 losses, 5-4 in the Big Ten. Not good enough, Buck, and I think you just point right there at the quarterback position. They better figure that out.
They got to figure it out, but I want to talk about the other quarterback. I think the interesting thing will be when we have our evaluation, there's been that run-up in the conversation of JT Barrett. And JT Barrett is a guy that is the only Ohio State quarterback to win 4 games against Michigan. He's 4-0 as a starter against them. The conversation continues to go up and down on whether he's a draftable player or not. When you get into the mix and you see the backup quarterback Haskins come in, and Haskins looks like, to me, in that
briefing, he can throw it better.
He looks like he's a dude. He can sling it or whatever. I'm curious to see what Barrett looks like against Wisconsin, because I think Wisconsin is underrated. But I want to see Wisconsin's defense kind of crowd the line of scrimmage and dare JT Barrett to beat them with the arm and see if he continues to take steps and make progress as a prospect.
Yeah, no, look, I haven't found anybody that's in love with him as a prospect. Everybody loves him as a kid. It'll be an interesting evaluation as we go forward. Couple other takeaways, Stanford all over Notre Dame. Stanford, those big tight ends, not afraid to just throw it up when you get down there in the red zone. I thought Notre Dame looked a little bit tired, a little bit beat up after the stretch that they've run through. Washington ended up beating clobbered Washington State in a game that didn't really matter to Washington, meant everything to Washington State. I've talked to a couple people. Actually, Bruce Feldman, our good buddy, sent me a text because he was at this game and said, man, you've got to watch this game and see Vita Vea, what he did for UW. And then unsolicited, talked to a couple other evaluators around the league that said, go watch what Vita Vea has done the last 3 or 4 weeks. He is a freak show. I've said it when I watched him over the summer. I thought he's a better version of Dontari Poe. And from everybody that I talked to that studied him this year, said he's taken it to a whole other level, especially over the last month.
I mean, he's a dominant player on the inside. I think the big thing is, how do you value a player like that? Does he have the ability in our league? Can we project him to be a pass rusher that can get you 6 to 8 sacks on the inside? Because if he's just a run player only, it's hard to justify expending a top pick on someone in a league that is skewing more towards the pass. It'll be interesting to see that. I think the other thing coming out of that game, Luke Fault. What do we make of Luke Fault right now? You're talking about someone that we talked about as high as maybe the fourth-rated quarterback in the class. But now we've seen at the end of the season, we've seen a bit of an implosion. We've seen him benched a couple times. We've seen him have some games. We've had multiple turnovers. Didn't play well on a game that could have pushed his team into the Pac-12 title game. I think as an evaluator, you have to kind of mark and hold those things against him because he certainly hasn't played like a premier quarterback prospect.
Remember we talked about last year how you got to give him a lot of credit for what they were able to do in the run game and all that. This game against UW, 15 carries for Washington State, minus 24 rushing yards.
Can't run the ball. You can't run the ball. It's hard to win. It's hard to be a one-dimensional team against very, very good defenses, and that is what is showing up. Washington State couldn't run the ball effectively, and their quarterback isn't good enough to put the team on his back.
Dante Pettis had an injury in that game. Hopefully he's going to be okay. He's an outstanding player. If you missed him earlier this year, he was on the podcast, a really neat kid. So hopefully he's going to be all right and see him at the Senior Bowl. All right, we've put this off. I can see the steam coming out of Sully's ears right now.
Steam.
Because the college coaching carousel has now become maybe my third favorite season of the year. Not fourth. To me, the draft is always my baby. Mm-hmm. Then I'll go the draft. I'll go with the NFL season. I'll go with the college season. And then it comes down to college carousel recruiting spring ball. I think I might – Buck, yeah – I might go college coaching carousel right to the top of that list of those
goodness,
three.
Oh, my goodness. It's so fun.
Yep.
It's been
right
unbelievable.
From the top.
And it's this year has been especially just off the rails.
Well, let's jump into it here.
Let's do it.
Tell us why you torpedoed a coach as fans. By the way, Tennessee, the only fan base that allows face painters to pick their head coach. But go ahead. What we got here,
hey,
Sully?
So I take out the Penn State stuff.
What is all this measured takes from you right now? Well, all this fire and emotion from you earlier.
Right?
Now you get the headset on and I get a measured, mature approach.
Take out the Penn State stuff, even though that is an issue with Tennessee because of the Title IX cases in the past. And we've had a lot of issues of our own at Tennessee. So that
refuted by everybody, but go ahead.
Well, no. Not at Tennessee. That's what I'm saying. Tennessee's
I'm saying
had their
Penn
own
State,
issues.
The Penn State thing. Throw that out. But we can agree to throw that out.
We'll throw it out, but I disagree with that too. But
wait, question for you: the folks that were lobbying for Lane Kiffin to come back.
Yeah, no, I don't agree with Lane Kiffin either. I don't agree with
There's
that.
There's a
either.
Lot of Tennessee folks. That I know bring Lane Kiffin back.
Bring him back.
Who's his coordinator, by the way? Who's
yeah,
coaching
Kendall Briles. Yeah, but he was clear too. So that's completely.
Well, that's fine. Then take that
yeah,
off the table. Penn State shouldn't even
well,
be
no,
mentioned.
That's different because we have.
That was the rallying cry on this whole
thing. That
was
a rallying cry. Yeah.
They painted on your rock.
Don't let that skew everything. That was when it got over the top, and I disagree with that. I disagree with that statement completely. That you're turning accusations into fact, and that's wrong.
Okay, go ahead.
So anyway, taking that out. John Kelly, leader of the team, said, when asked after Butch Jones was gone, what is the one thing you were looking for in a head coach?
Is this John Kelly the leader of the winless team in the SEC? Go ahead.
But he's, yeah, I mean, okay. That doesn't have anything to do with it.
Okay.
He is a leader, and he's a heck of a running back.
This guy just pushes buttons.
Yeah, you're pushing my buttons. He said he wanted a coach that you could trust. And Greg Schiano, along the entire way, has shown, quote, fear and distrust when he was at Tampa. That's obviously not trust. And he's intimidating and downright disrespectful when he was at Rutgers. It doesn't sound like a coach that you want to follow up Butch Jones, who sounds a lot like what he was at Tennessee.
So intimidating is the one word I wrote down there.
Okay. Disrespectful, fear and distrust amongst the locker room in Tampa.
Okay, hold on 1 second. Disrespectful and feared.
Yeah.
Okay, Bucky. How would you describe the Alabama head coach?
That's the
hard
thing.
Hard nose, tough.
Would you describe him as intimidating?
Intimidating.
Would you say
not
that
going to
has he ever been disrespectful to the media?
I get that.
At all?
Yes. I get the Saban thing.
Has he ever? Do you think they're scared of him or feared?
Yes. You think Greg Schiano is if you're going to do
question
that,
for you? Question
if you're
going
to do that, go out and get the best coach possible. It's not.
Question
Greg Schiano is not worth. All
who's
those,
the best,
all that baggage.
Who's the best coach in college football, and you can't dispute it?
Nick Saban.
Nick Saban. Okay.
Yeah.
Who is Greg Schiano closest to?
Bill Belichick. Urban Meyer.
Urban Meyer.
Yeah, sure. That's
Nick
great.
Nick Saban. They're like a crew.
He's not him.
Brothers.
He's not him.
Six of his last 7 years.
Hold up.
He went to bowl games.
How did Bill
he had Rutgers at number 3 in the country.
It's Butch
at
Jones
one time.
2.0.
That
Butch
is
Jones
unbelievable to think about that.
But you know
Butch
what?
Jones
but you know
him.
What? He wasn't successful with Tampa. And you know we all know how successful Bill Belichick was with the Browns. I mean,
oh, you know
once
how,
he got that
you know
first
Pete Carroll was a great NFL
he
coach.
He was awesome,
too,
yeah.
Before he went to SC.
Yeah.
Steve Spurrier, yada yada yada. I get it. I don't think he's as good of a coach to follow up Butch Jones to get the exact same thing because he is Butch Jones 2.0.
I just don't know who's going to be a better coach to come in.
Mike Gundy, Mike Leach, Kevin Sutherland,
Mike
Jeff Brom,
Mike
Harbaugh.
What has Mike Leach
Miles,
ever won?
Justin Fuente.
And Justin then, Fuentes. Like, he's going to leave Virginia Tech to go to Tennessee.
No, he's not. I didn't say that, but that was a list that I put together that is better than Greg Schiano.
Yeah,
why
I can
Greg
make
Schiano,
you a list of the top 10 coaches in the country. They're not coming to Tennessee.
Who can you get? I think you can go out and get Mike Gundy if you pay him $8.4 million, which is the number that they're pointing out. You can go get
Boone
Mike
Pickens
Leach.
Could find that money in the ashtray of his 15th
yes, he could.
Car.
He may have that
trickling in a bubblegum wrapper.
But it's not like Tennessee doesn't have the money either.
No, they all have money. It just comes down to whether or not it's a good job.
I know. I agree with that. And I think Tennessee is a better job than Oklahoma State.
I would agree that that's – but it's his alma mater. Number one. And
they have
an unbelievable amount of cash.
They do.
And I think there is a factor here of some people saying the folks are crazy down there.
Yep.
And I don't want to jump into
that. I agree with that too. But if you're going to be run off by a bunch of Twitter crazies and people painting the rock, I don't want you in the SEC.
Well, here's the thing. The fact that a significant portion of your alumni and fan base buys the John Gruden thing every time your job comes open
right.
is a major red flag to me.
They
because
buy
the rest
they,
of the country cracks up laughing at this. They're falling for this again.
They bought it, but that wasn't the reason. I want to be very clear about this. That was not the reason why everybody rose up over Greg Schiano. Absolutely not. If you go up and hire any
oh,
of
I know
dudes out of name.
Yeah, because he's from up north.
No, like most of these guys that I just listed off are from up north. It doesn't matter.
Now I've got him fired up.
No, that's. I mean, I don't care if the coach is from Mars. I don't care if he's coming from that north.
Let me encourage you, okay? I've been trying to poke the bear and have fun.
Yeah, you're poking
with you.
Bears.
But I want to be a good friend, and I want to encourage you. And this is what I'm going to leave you with, and we can end it on this, on the Tennessee subject. I guarantee you, 100%, you can write it in ink.
Yeah.
You guys will have a better SEC record next year than you did this year.
Oh, that's a fact. Yeah. I mean, there's never been a worse record
in the history
of Tennessee.
How do you go over?
I know. In the history of – that's the worst year in the history of Tennessee football.
Ugh.
Outside of 1909, I think, when their only one was against Transylvania.
Yeah.
Take that year out, this was the worst year in Tennessee football.
Chip Kelly to UCLA, Bucky. You like it?
I love Chip Kelly going to UCLA. And the reason I like it going to UCLA is because I think he's a better play at UCLA than –
Florida.
I thought at Florida he would have the athletes available. But I think when you look at the way Chip Kelly enjoys or kind of lives his life, he's kind of the king at UCLA. He'll have an opportunity to go and continue to put deep roots
in California.
He
has a way
longer
rope, too, at UCLA.
He'll get an opportunity to – you know, he has a young quarterback coming in that can run his system. We saw him do it with quarterbacks of lesser talent. I think the main thing for UCLA, can they find skill guys?
Yeah.
That has been their
biggest –
They haven't
had them.
That's been their biggest weakness. They've had a quarterback the last couple of years, but they haven't had blue-chip skill guys. Can Chip Kelly attract some skill guys to play on the
outside?
What
did Chip Kelly have at Oregon? Just burners.
The interesting thing, though, is when you really look at those teams, I mean, there's some more defensive guys that had success coming out of Oregon than really offensive guys. Well, Michael James, undersized, didn't really work out. D'Anthony
Thomas. But good college player.
You know, he's a good special teams
player.
Good college players. But who are the great receivers that have come out of Oregon?
They haven't. The other thing will be, we're kind of hanging our hat on the old Oregon that we have. How is Chip – how will he come back and be one step ahead of the posse? Because everyone is kind of caught up to the way Oregon played up there when he was there. What is his next iteration? How does he evolve? What will be the thing that he unveils that is different that people in the Pac-12 haven't seen?
So I mentioned this. I should go find the tweet because I'm pretty sure I tweeted it out earlier this year. I did a New Mexico game. They played New Mexico State. And if you've watched New Mexico play, we've talked about it. Bob Davey is in the gun but running the triple option from the gun. It's a fascinating offense.
Fascinating. A lot of touches. Everyone
gets it. They led the country in rushing a couple years ago. It is very creative. It just imagine Navy in the shotgun. That's what you see with Bob Davey did down there. Now, it hasn't been as good a year for this year, but creative stuff. When I was talking with him in the lead-up to that game, they said Chip Kelly had spent some time there studying this. Chip Kelly's been going around. So I think some people saying – everybody caught up to Chip Kelly, and now that's not going to work anymore. I think Chip Kelly, especially having a year to sit around and study, Chip Kelly's got a whole new bag of tricks I think he's getting ready to unload on people. They're going to score points. I don't have any question about it in my mind. They're going to score points. They need to get the right defensive coordinator. They need to find, like you said, get some skill players. Mm-hmm. But they're going to score points coming out the gate. To me, it comes down to defensive coordinator and can they get some defensive linemen, because that's what they're going to need. At Oregon,
they got one. Right now, that five-star stud.
Jalen Phillips is a stud.
Right.
But they need to go get some more if they're going to be at a very, very high level.
I mean, that's the hire that I'm waiting on. I'm waiting to see who comes with them as his D coordinator. Because whoever comes as a D coordinator will have the toughest job, because you have to build a defense that can complement an offense that is going to operate at warp speed. He has no desire to slow the pace down. So you have to figure out a way to play arena ball defense to get enough stops to give him the ball back more than the opposition.
You going to be surprised if Jimbo Fisher leaves and goes to A&M, Buck?
I would say this year would be the year for him to go, and only because he appeared to kind of grow weary of the fan base and the expectations and the things that were kind of directed at him. I can see it. I don't know if A&M is a better job than Florida State. But I can't see him wanting to get away from the Florida State thing after kind of dealing with it. Also, he had to live in Bobby Bowden's shadow for a while. Maybe he wants to create his own legacy.
Yeah, he got a chance to – look, if he can go to A&M and just win it once.
They'll build a statue.
Holy moly, yes.
They'll build a statue.
Everybody wants to be at a statue program.
You got to deal with Saban a couple times a year, though, in that SEC West.
Yep. If Mike Gundy wins it all, they'll build a statue.
There you go. Hey, man.
Where's he going to build it at?
He's, you know, Tennessee.
Where's he going to win it? He's going to win it at Oklahoma
App
State?
State. You know, App State.
Do you know how hard it is to leave your alma mater? You're going to leave your alma mater to go to another school just for some cash.
The chance to win it all.
I don't know.
You think he's going to do
have
that
Have we ever
Stillwater?
Seen that? Have we ever seen someone leave?
He's been in the top five
at
Oklahoma
double,
State.
Yeah.
Have we ever seen anyone leave
they're gonna double
their
the
alma mater to go to another school? Has that ever been done?
That's definitely been done. I just
surely I just can't think of it.
I
just
can't. I mean, at a high level, like a.
That's
I just haven't seen it.
Yeah. You know, App State and Tennessee have two things in common.
How many SEC wins?
That's one of them.
Yeah,
we both lost nail biters to. Or no, sorry, we don't have that. You beat UMass.
Yeah.
Almost lost to UMass. We actually did lose to UMass.
Yeah, there you go.
You beat them 17-13. That was a big one.
Yeah, that was a big one.
Anyways, hey. I'm sure you guys will be up there in the top recruiting rankings like you are every year. And
every year.
You bounce back.
Yeah, right. Four straight top 15 classes.
How many does that stadium hold?
104,455.
Jeez.
Yep. A lot more than T-Boone Pickens Stadium.
It does.
But the thing is, T-Boone can fill that thing with cash.
Yeah.
Just give it to that staff.
Now, I'll tell you what.
Mercy.
Buck, I can't wait. I'm excited to see who the Tennessee fans hire as their next head coach.
Here we come.
Let's see. So when they sign the check, do the fans actually have to sign it? Like, they sign off on that?
Like, it's like the Packers. Work? They're like the Packers.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah,
like Packers. A publicly owned.
We're more owned than the Packers at this point.
More like the Packers.
That was fun. So I love pushing your buttons.
Buddy. I know you do.
It's good to have you back.
It's great to be back, boys.
We missed you, buddy.
Miss you too.
I won't go over all of the picks from this last week. Just suffice it to say.
11-0.
It was a nice week for me.
Bowl season. First 11-0 season.
Bowl season.
That's when Bucky makes his run. All right, let's get out of here. That was a jam-packed show. That was a lot of fun. Hope you guys enjoyed listening to it as much as I did poking Sully's buttons there. Let's get out of here, Buck. I got to get out of here. The traffic's going to be bad.
Oh, geez.
We got to run. All right, that's going to do it for us. Move the Sticks, DJ Bucky. Sully back in the saddle. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks.
with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.